1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. I'm not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On the Monday edition of the program, Matthew Stafford is not on the Bears. We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Brett Boone, the three-time MLB All-Star and host of the Boone Podcast. We talk with him about his amazing MLB career, playing with the Seattle Mariners, winning 116 games in one season, plus his new podcast, The Baseball Hall of Fame, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Today's show is brought to you by State Farm agent Ryan McDevitt. If you're a local small business owner, you know how important it is to be there for your customers. State Farm agent Ryan McDevitt runs a small business in Downers Grove, too, and he's here to help you protect your small business. Call Ryan today at 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or visit his website, ryanismyagent.com. That's ryanismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. You know, I woke up this morning pretty happy. And no, that's not because of the snow and having to shovel 10 inches of it out of my driveway. It's because the Bears didn't overpay for an okay quarterback. John, what are you talking about? Matthew Stafford would have been the best quarterback in Bears history. Yeah? Was he worth what the Rams gave up? No. He wasn't. Matthew Stafford, at age 33, is not worth two first-round picks, a third-round pick, and Jared Goff. And secondly, the Bears don't even have those resources. They don't have all that to give up for Matthew Stafford. I'm sure all of you saw the trade already. Made headlines last night. And all I have to say is the Lions won it. They did. A week ago on Twitter, an executive said, quote, "The Lions are waiting for a sucker to overpay. I'm just enthralled. I'm so happy. It wasn't the Bears. It could have been. They are that desperate. They said they want to make a big play this offseason. Matthew Stafford is not the guy to make a big play over. The Rams gave up two first-round picks, Goff, and a third-round pick for a 74-90 quarterback. Now, I know Stafford will do great out there. He will. Under the tutelage of Sean McVay, and he'll have weapons, a decent defense, they'll win, which will prompt many of you to say, John, you were wrong on this. No. Here's the thing. He wouldn't win here. It's a night and day difference from L.A. to Chicago, the situations. Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Tyler Higbee at tight end, three different running backs averaging 4 yards per carry. That's the Rams, plus a decent defense, and Sean McVay. The Bears, if they're lucky, will franchise tag Allen Robinson, And it'll be him and Mooney, David Montgomery, good running back, no O-line, and a defense regressing. Tell me how Matthew Stafford would do in that situation. He wouldn't do anything. And Jared Goff certainly wouldn't. I saw a lot of people in the comments last week say, why is Jared Goff not on your list? He's all right. He's not a project. How do you think he's going to do in Detroit? That's all you need to know about Goff and the Bears. Seriously, what do you think he'll do up there? My guess is 6-10. 5-11, maybe. That's it. You know how we say Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, who's the real mastermind? They're both good. They both succeed. Goff and McVay, we know who the mastermind is and who the sucker is. Jared Goff is the sucker. Jared Goff is the guy who just performed well because of the system. And that's it. He didn't do anything good. And even then, even in LA with that system, he still struggled. He still had issues. This past season, 3,900 passing yards, 20 touchdowns, 13 picks, a 90 passer rating. Kind of looks like Trubisky numbers, doesn't it? Right. He was barely keeping his head above water in Los Angeles. I can't even imagine, I can't fathom what he'd do in a Bears uniform. It'd be atrocious. I'd rather have Nick Foles, not kidding, than Jared Goff. At least we know Foles has won a Super Bowl. Goff hasn't, and he certainly won't now in Detroit. That's going to be the end of his career. I'm saying it right now. Jared Goff in Detroit. I'm laughing just thinking about it. And to think a lot of people wanted him here in Chicago. Give me a break. And all of you who clamored and begged for Matthew Stafford, now you're probably thinking, you know what? Buyer's remorse. Yes. Is Matthew Stafford worth two first-round picks, a third-round pick, and a Pro Bowl quarterback? No. No, he's not. I was texting with someone yesterday before the trade went down, and he told me, oh, it'll only be one first-round pick. The Bears should go after him. I'm like, really? One first-round pick for Stafford? After the reports came out that the Lions are looking for someone to overpay, I said it has to be at least two firsts. And sure enough, it was. And I know the contract played a big deal, or, you know, because the Lions are paying for it. They're going to pay for Goff's inflated contract, I understand. But in general, two first-round picks for Stafford? No thanks. What concerns me is that Deshaun Watson's value and the price for him went way up. That's the scary thing. Should the Bears give up, for example, four first-round picks for Deshaun Watson? Everybody says, go all in. The Bears have never had a franchise quarterback. They should be spending everything they have. Should there be a price limit? Is there too much the Bears could give up for Deshaun Watson? I say yes, there is. And the Stafford trade proved it to me. I saw everybody say way too much for Matthew Stafford. I know Watson's better, but not that much better. Stafford has 50,000 passing yards. Veteran, been around for a long time. He will succeed in L.A. So is Watson worth that kind of return? No. I don't think so. If I were the Bears, I wouldn't be giving up four first-round picks for a quarterback who can't win. Statistically, he can't win. And if you bring him into a situation that's eerily similar to Houston, what do you expect the results to be? Are you expecting 10-6, 11-5? Not going to happen. They'll be lucky if they go 8-8, 9-7 with Watson. That's not an indictment on him. It's an indictment on the team around him. So is it worth giving up 4 first-round picks for a 9-7 record? We just went over this season. 8-8's not good enough. Playoffs, not good enough. Have to get further. So 4 first-round picks for 9-7, that's okay, though? We're all fine with that? Everyone's on the same page? No. There is a limit. Now, if we're talking Aaron Rodgers, we're talking Tom Brady, we're talking about generational talents who could win in any situation, different. Deshaun Watson, great quarterback, but can't win. He needs people around him. The Bears cannot supply that. The delusion has overcome Bears fans. They can't supply that, and you know it. Are we forgetting already what happened this past season? And we know it's not the quarterback. Foles, Mitch, doesn't matter. That wasn't the big issue for this team. The defense regressed. Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace. Are we forgetting about the press conference and them getting fired and all of that stuff? Are we just going to throw that off to the side? It seems like it. That's what it looks like to me. Not good to have short-term memory. I remember. The Bears were 5-7. They said tear it down. Now all of a sudden, everyone's under the belief that if only the Bears had the right quarterback, they'd win. It's not that. That's not the problem. Is Mitch great? No. Could they do better? Yes. Will they do that much better with Deshaun Watson? I don't think so. Giving up 4 first-round picks in the process? No. We just have to think. We have to remember. Not even think, just remember what happened before. That's the issue here. I give Ryan Pace, actually, a lot of credit so far. No Matthew Stafford, and now no Jimmy Garoppolo. A report came out today that the 49ers plan to retain Garoppolo. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. That would have been a train wreck. Jimmy Garoppolo is literally Mitch Trubisky, if not just a tad better. Had the Bears done that, I would have been furious. If they actually gave up draft picks and money and NFL players, to get Jimmy Garoppolo, I would have lost it. And if you think Garoppolo's a significant upgrade over Mitch Trubisky, please do your homework, check his numbers, watch 49ers games. He is not even close. His numbers compared to Mitch, eerily similar. But just because his name isn't Mitch Trubisky, we gotta have him. Right? That's the mindset. Same with Stafford. Same with Goff. Anybody. Well, it's not Mitch, so might as well bring him in. And this isn't being a Mitch apologist. It's the truth. Would any of those guys I just mentioned really make a significant difference? Would they turn the Bears from a 5-11, 6-10 team into 12-4? No. They wouldn't. And we know that. It may not be said publicly, may not be said enough, but deep down, we all know. No, Matthew Stafford is not going to make the Bears a 12-4 team. Jared Goff? Certainly not. Jimmy Garoppolo? I'd argue he'd make him worse. So let's think about what's out there. Let's think about the market. And let's think about what the Bears would have to give up for a quarterback who would be marginally better or even worse. Let's keep all this in mind. Believe me, I know you want a new guy. I know you're sick of Mitch and Nick and this whole storyline. I know. But do you want to mortgage all of the future for a quarterback who'd make a small difference at best? You don't want that. I don't want it. This team has already done way too much damage when it comes to the draft. We could all agree on that. Why do more? Why add on to it? Why make it worse? It's not worth it. You may want it, but it's not worth it. The only quarterback I could see making a legitimate difference is Deshaun Watson. But even then, it wouldn't be catastrophic. He wouldn't turn them into a 12-4 team because of the roster around him. Then you have to wonder, should the Bears realistically give up four first-round picks to go from 5-11 to 8-8 for next year? No. And had they done that for Matthew Stafford, I would have been furious. He's a good quarterback, but what would he do here with this roster and this situation? Nothing. Same with Watson. Now his price has gone up significantly because of the Stafford trade. And I'm of the mindset that four first-round picks for a 4-12 quarterback to come to this situation and maybe go 8-8, 9-7, that isn't worth it. That isn't worth it. Remember this past year? Remember what happened? Was it really a quarterback issue? Come on. Was it? No, it wasn't. Head coaching, GM, defense regressed, offensive line, bad offensive scheme, switching play calling duties. That was the issue. What makes you think a similar roster to this year for next year with a new quarterback would change everything? They'd be marginally better. And marginally better, to me, is not worth four first-round picks. Even three is a bit of a stretch. But the Bears never had a franchise quarterback. I want one. Why not draft? Why not wait till the team's in the right position to make the move? Why bring in a franchise quarterback when the rest of the team isn't up to par? Then what? When Deshaun Watson comes here and the Bears go 8-8, what's going to be the narrative then? You're going to blame Deshaun Watson, a top 10 QB, for going 8-8? Or are you going to realize, wow, the team around him really sucks? See what I mean? It's not worth it for the Bears to give up all this draft capital and possible NFL players to get really any quarterback. I'm fine with a free agent signing. I'm fine with a draft pick. But to give up all that for a guy who will make a small difference, it just doesn't make sense. I don't want to mortgage the future for first-round picks, potentially, to get a quarterback who'd do very little. To go from 5-11 projected to 7-9, 8-8. This past year was considered a failure by everybody. 8-8, that's horrible. Bounced out of the first round of the playoffs, that's horrible. It'd be the same next year with a different quarterback. Tell me I'm wrong. With potentially one wide receiver, if the Bears don't tag Robinson, Montgomery, similar defense, No O-line. Would Watson make plays? Trubisky can't? Sure, sometimes. That won't lead to 11-12 wins, division win, deep run in the playoffs. It wouldn't. So why make the trade? Why give up everything for small improvement? Let's think before we run around saying we just need a new quarterback. There are deeper issues within this team. That said, I'm enthralled. I'm extremely happy that the Bears didn't give up so much for so little in return. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Brett Boone comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 free to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. You must be an Illinois resident. You must be 21 plus. You could bet on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. $250 free. Bet on the Super Bowl. College basketball, men's and women's. The NBA's going on. The Bulls are hot. Great time to put down some money and win a whole lot more back. SportsTalkChicago.com/cash. That's SportsTalkChicago.com/cash. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports Talk Chicago. Here with John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a three-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glove Award winner, and the host of the Boone Podcast. Please welcome Brett Boone to the program. Brett, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being here. What was your reaction to the Hank Aaron news?
Wow. Over the years, I've had you know, a few interactions with Hank. I played in Atlanta in 99. So I had my interactions with him. Just as a kid growing up, the name Hank Aaron, and when you really get into, I don't know if there's a bigger name ever. You know, you talk about Babe Ruth and the iconic guys, Mantle and DiMaggio. Hank Aaron's one of the, you know, from my childhood to present, it just kind of, it goes along with baseball and that he, you know, I know he was getting up there in age, but to suddenly lose a guy, it kind of hits you. And the one thing about Hank Aaron that I've always said, you know, there's a lot of talk about who the greatest player, you know, you can debate forever, the greatest player of all time, this guy is better than this guy. Hank Aaron, to me, was always kind of categorized into the home run champ. You know, you think Hank Aaron, you think home runs. But if you look into his career, he was so much more than that. This guy, my opinion, you know, I and I'm pretty, you know, I have a little bias to my generation, but I put Bonds, Ruth, and Aaron as the three greatest players in the history of the game. And, you know, Aaron hit the home runs. Yeah, he had 3,700 hits.
Right.
He had almost 2,300 ribbies, you know, 2,200 runs scored. It's like, and the most impressive thing to me, and as a young man, he ran a lot. He stole a lot of bases. He was a great defender. But he was a .300 career. And I hold that, you know, in high regards. Because today, you know, with the analytics, and we've gotten a little bit away from average, this guy was an unbelievable, unbelievable player.
What's your favorite memory or story about him?
I don't know if I have one because I was really young, you know, right. Hammer and Hank. And it was interesting when he passed away the other day and I heard the news, you know, I got a few phone calls and I didn't realize that Dad was behind the plate for 700. And I had dinner with my dad the other day and he goes, yeah, Brett, you know that I caught 700. And I said, yeah, Dad, I'm way ahead of you. But yeah, I just, you know, the classic, he epitomized this game.
Brett Boone here on Sports Talk Chicago. Brett, is Hank Aaron the home run king to you?
No, Barry Bonds is.
Really?
He's got more homers.
How do you feel about him using steroids, though?
Uh, I think it's a thing that obviously is a part of the game, that era. And I've got different feelings than everybody else. I don't like people in the media trying to play God. And it seems like everybody's got their opinion. This guy did, this guy didn't. And they kind of pick and choose, you know, you'll hear a guy that says, oh yeah, but he did it the right way. And I think to myself, how do you know who did it the right way? Who didn't do it the right way? It's opinion based. There's no fact. Now, if you were to get caught in a test, that's different. Now you've got facts, but I think it's just a bunch of reporters playing God and deciding who took and who didn't take it. And he's the greatest player I've ever seen, and hands down the greatest hitter. And when you've got other generations, when you've got guys like my dad saying that Bonds is the greatest and unbelievable, and my grandfather who passed away in 2004, who grew up in the Ted Williams era, and I'm telling you, couldn't tell Grandpa anyone was better than Ted Williams. And the day before he died, he looked at me and he said, Brett, yes, Barry Bonds is a better hitter than Ted Williams. And that kind of floored me. Like, wow. Grandpa admitted that, you know, basically on his deathbed. And I knew right then he was going to pass away, because he was never going to beat that thing to come back and have to deal with the scrutiny he'd get from me. So, yes, Babe Ruth. Or Hank Aaron's one of the greatest ever, but to me, you know, the numbers are the numbers.
Should Barry Bonds be in the Hall of Fame then?
Without a doubt. Greatest player of all time.
Do you think today steroid users are already in the Hall of Fame?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I think you have to you know, I think we've had enough time to kind of digest that era. And I don't think it's appropriate to pick and choose. It's you take the entire generation and you judge it according to the people that dominated that generation. And you can speculate all you want, but when it comes down to people deciding who, yeah, he did, I think he did, I think he didn't, nobody knows. Unless somebody's come up negative or positive on a test, it's all speculation.
As a clean player in that era, did you sense a disadvantage when you played?
I didn't at all, and I didn't think about it. You know, I prided myself on training as hard as I could. And to be quite honest with you, until the early 2000s, I really was pretty naive to the whole thing. I wasn't a gym guy. I wasn't a workout guy. I was that kind of that old school, I'm a baseball player. I don't lift weights. It's not until 99, 2000 when I really started getting into the training side of the game, which is prevalent in today's game. I mean, all these kids today, they start training at age 16.
Right.
And I wish I'd have known then what I know now, how beneficial that could be. Not just the physical side where you can transform your body and you know, kind of train year around, but I think the mental side, there's so many positives to training and diet that I really got into the second half of my career.
Were you frustrated when you found out about it? Like the fact that a lot of people in the game had this advantage and you didn't, and you chose not to do it?
I think no, there was not frustration. Everybody had that choice. And at that time in the game, it wasn't a banned substance in the game of baseball. So everybody had that opportunity. I think the biggest fear, and I'll kind of compare it to the corked bat.
Okay.
It's like, man, it was always fun to take a corked bat out early, you know, and once in a while, somebody would come up with one and just have it in the clubhouse, and you'd swing it in batting practice to see if there was a difference. And there's that temptation of, wow, I could probably cork a bat but the thought of that thing exploding and Super Bowls going all over, I mean, that would tarnish your career for everything you've done. I was scared to death to do it, because I'm thinking, wow, You know, everything I've done with a regular bat, if I got one time, if I used that thing and it smashed, your whole life of, oh, that's why the little guy hit home runs comes into play. So I was kind of scared to do anything like that, but definitely not frustration, definitely not anger. It was a part of the game at the time. And you know, people did it, people didn't do it. And really it was a hush hush. It wasn't something that was in the clubhouse and talked about a lot.
Brent Boone here on Sports Talk Chicago. Brent, when did you know that you wanted to play in the major leagues?
Well, probably since I can remember. You know, my grandpa, my grandpa was a huge influence on me early in my career. Early in my childhood, I spent a lot of time with him, and he was kind of the guy that I'd wake up at 6 a.m. Let's go play catch. It's just something. I never thought about anything else. You know, I loved the game. It was introduced to me. By no means was it really pushed on us as kids. It was just our life. You know, Dad went to the ballpark every day and he let me tag along, and it's just something I loved. And he always encouraged me, but he was very supportive and he never pushed it. You got to be a baseball player. It's just something I was born to do. And I was actually growing up, I was a very naive kid. You know, it's, you asked me when I was 10 years old, what do you want to be when you grow up? And, you know, a lot of kids say, I want to be a policeman or I want to be a fireman. I was always going to be a baseball player. And, you know, I didn't know what that entailed until I got into my adult life. But the naivety, I think, that I had actually worked to my advantage.
But was there pressure on you to live up to your dad's footsteps and live up to your grandfather?
I didn't feel that at all.
No,
you know, I was the first one, the first third generation player, and there was a lot made of it. It was actually kind of pissed me off, you know, going through the minor leagues and having big games or having really good seasons. It seemed like everybody wanted to talk about, well, you know, the question you just asked me, how do you feel any pressure? And I thought, no. And after a while, I started to resent those questions. Like, let's talk about what I'm doing. You know, I'm hitting 330 here in AAA. I don't want to talk about, I don't give a crap about grandpa. You know, I don't care about my dad, because at that point, you got to make your stamp on your own, and daddy's not going to be there to help you. So I never felt any pressure at all. You know, and that's just me. That's an individual thing. Aaron came behind me, and I'm sure he got the same questions I did. Now he had me. So it was grandpa, dad, and your brother. But Aaron shrugged that off as well. And I could see from a young age that he was going to be fine, because that wasn't, you know, that wasn't something he was striving to be. He wanted to play big league baseball because that's what he wanted to do, not because of his family.
How did it feel to come up with Aaron and play with him too in Cincinnati?
Well, I think it was, you know, Aaron was 4 years younger than me. So really as kids, we never played together. You know, he was always playing with the younger kids. And when I was graduating high school, he was entering high school, just like the college thing. I went to USC. He followed me at USC, but never played together. First time we played together was in the big leagues.
Wow.
And we got to play together in 98. You know, looking back, I really don't remember those days too vividly, because once we took the field, it was, yeah, we're brothers, but we got a job to do. And I looked at Aaron not as my brother when we're on the field. That's my third baseman. He better give me a good feed on this double play, coming up. But looking back on it now, pretty special to get to play with your brother. I only got to do it for 1 year, but yeah, it was interesting time, and like I said, when you look back on everything, pretty lucky to get to do some of the things I got to do.
Who's the better baseball player, you or Aaron?
Well, I think that's obvious. Let's check the numbers.
Let me ask you this. Why did your career take off in Seattle? What made the difference there versus Cincinnati and the other places you played in?
Well, I think, you know, as a young player, I was kind of coming in with my hair on fire and swinging hard and really just trying to make a name for myself. I had a couple real good years in Cincinnati and a couple real humbling years. You know, I got beat down pretty good in 96, 97. got to go to my first World Series in 99. And I really kind of made a decision at that point in my baseball career that I want to be as good as I can be. I kind of changed my outlook on everything from a training standpoint. And I went to Seattle in 2001. I got back with my old skipper, Lou Piniella. And I really took this opportunity with a guy named Edgar Martinez, who was the DH for us, the recently got inducted in the Hall of Fame. And I just watched Edgar because at the time and our whole generation, one of the greatest, especially right-handed hitters of our time. And I kind of just sat down with Edgar from day one in spring training, picked his brain and said, Edgar, why are you so good? What makes you the difference? And he just taught me a bunch of things. And it wasn't from a physical side. It was nothing to do with my swing. It was to do with how I mentally approached the game. And, he was that mentor of mine that really took my the offensive side of the ball to a different level for me.
What made 2001 so special, individually and as a team?
Well, I had, my greatest year. But team-wise, up until that point, I was a guy that didn't believe in, this team chemistry. I thought it was a bunch of crap. I thought you get the best players out there and you play like hell.
Right.
And talent will supersede everything else. I was coming off a Braves team that I think we won 104-105 games in Atlanta, went to the World Series, got beat by the Yankees. And that was the most talented team I'd been on to that point. But in 2001, that changed. And the chemistry of that team, something we had, and I don't want to get too, froofy with the magical and this and that, but there was something about that team from the main guys on that team to the 25th man on the roster. There was something different in the air that year that I can't really explain. And I don't think any of my teammates could. It was just kind of it wasn't an arrogance, but it was just such a obvious confidence that we had when we took the field. And to the point where our opponents, you could feel it from the opponent. Like they knew they were going to get their ass kicked. And we did it, and it was 116 games. It was a bunch of really good players. I mean, we had all-stars and gold gloves and batting champs on that team. But it was a lot more than that. It was a camaraderie that I'd never had before, and it was just a magical year start to finish. And to be honest, it was a veteran team. So it was a bunch of guys that had been through a lot of ups and a lot of downs in their career. So I'll play that humble card again. A lot of guys on that team had been through adversity and been humbled in this game. So we didn't take ourselves too serious. We knew this was something special. So we didn't question it. We just wrote it out and we won 116 games. And the only question left today is how did we not finish the deal? And when I get together with some of my old teammates, we still look at each other and shake our heads like, how did we not finish that off in 2001? But it was, man, what a fun time in the Northwest we had in those years in Seattle in the early 2000s.
Is that a regret of yours today to not win a World Series, especially with that team?
Well, I don't think it's a regret. I think it's something that kind of sticks in my craw a little bit. Like, wow, we were there with it. We didn't lose a series until September.
Wow.
And I'm just sitting there thinking, how did we not? I mean, we went into every series like, well, this is automatic. We're going to win. And that particular year against the Yankees in the regular season, that's why now today when I'm doing on the analyst side of things, when they say, well, the regular season, they were X and Y in that matchup. And I think that's irrelevant. Because in 2001, I think we had beaten up the Yankees pretty good in the regular season. And when we got to that ALCS, you could throw all that out the window because we ended up losing to them. And the last thing any of us thought on that Mariner team was the Yankees are going to beat us. And they did.
What's your greatest MLB achievement to you?
Man, I look back and I have so many great memories and so many great teammates. I don't think I could pick one. It was my first day in the big leagues. What a day. It's every kid's dream, especially when you're chasing it So that was big for me. I don't know. I don't have any one. That 2001 season was full of really special moments for me. Winning my first Gold Glove, going to my first All-Star game, going to my first World Series. These are all real cool things. Getting to play with my brother in 98. You know, my dad was the bench coach for me in 94, and I went in like, oh, no, Dad's going to be watching everything I do. And I'll tell you what, 94 ended up being a real good year for me personally, but it opened my eyes. Dad was unbelievable. I loved having him around because he had that uncanny ability that when we walked through those clubhouse doors, it was player coach. And the nice part about it was on an off day, I could go have dinner with my dad. But once we walked through those doors, it wasn't father son, it was player coach. And I attribute that a lot to my dad and the professional approach he took to being there. So I have too many to really name. Those are just a few, but the overall experience, it's just one doesn't really trump another.
More to come with Brett Boone in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Brett Boone still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Brett, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, your favorite pitcher to face was who?
Oh, my favorite. I don't know. That's usually not a question I get is who didn't you like to face? I don't know. You know, in those early 2000 days, we had such an unbelievable division. We were kind of the class of baseball in the AL West, you know, with those Oakland teams with the big three they had, our Seattle teams. Texas had was really formidable back then. And I loved going to Oakland, and those guys were real talented pitchers, but I loved that rivalry we had. I loved going to Anaheim and facing those early 2000 teams because they were real rivalries. So those, you know, the pitchers from those teams, I really liked facing. Usually, let's be honest, the guys you like facing are the guys that you get hits off of, and you don't care how you did it. It's just you did it. So, but nobody comes to mind, oh, he's pitching today, you know. I had Andy Bennis's number for a lot of years, and then late in his career, he got me back a little bit. So it ebbed and flowed. It was more the guys I didn't want to face that I really remember.
Who were the ones you didn't want to face?
It's pretty easy to sum it up for me. It starts and ends with those Braves teams of the 90s. And when you had to go to Atlanta, it was Maddox, Smoltz, Glavine. And what a nightmare that was for hitters in the 90s. But, you know, all the normal guys, you know, the guys that weren't fun. Randy Johnson was no fun to face. Pedro was no fun to face. You know, I actually did okay off Pedro. But it was no walk in the park. But those, I'm telling you, I still get the shakes now, thinking about that those Maddox, Smoltz, Glavine days.
Your favorite all-time teammate, who's that?
Oh, it's too hard. I got a lot. You know, Edgar comes to mind. Mike Cameron comes to mind for me. But I had so many great ones. You know, Larkin was a mentor for me when I was a young player in Cincinnati, my double play partner. But it's tough for me to pick a favorite. You know, there were so many, and they're just a lot of good guys. And the perception in today's game is, you know, especially from a fan standpoint, is, oh, that guy's a jerk. He's overpaid. He's, you know, what I found, I had a lot of teammates. At the end of the day, the guys are pretty good guys. You know, people have to understand they have a job to do. We have a job to do. Our job is to play our ass off at 7 o'clock every night. And what we can do on the side, signing autographs. And, you know, you have a lot of people pulling at you when you're in your career.
Right.
From a lot of different angles. And I found that out of all the teammates I ever had, I can count on one hand the guys I really didn't care for. It doesn't mean when the game ends, I want to go to dinner with all my teammates. But at the same time, for the most part, Major League Baseball players, pretty good guys.
What's the funniest prank you pulled on your teammates in the clubhouse?
I wasn't a prank guy.
No?
You know, I smiled and you know, enjoyed other people doing that. You know, when I was young, I deserved a lot of this. But you get hazed as a rookie in the big leagues, and I got hazed a couple times, you know, and they'd make me wear a dress on the plane or cut my suits in half and cut the buttons off. And for me, I just kind of took it in stride and thought, the more I resist this or fight this, the tougher they're going to be on me. So I just wear it with a smile and I'll get through this section. And I enjoyed that. That's just a part of the game. As I became a veteran player, I really wasn't that guy. You know, I'd partake and I'd laugh at the rookie because I'm thinking I went through it. He went through it. But I wasn't really a guy that facilitated it.
And Brett, before we finish up today, last question. Is it true that you had 3 lockers in Seattle? And if so, why?
I did. I don't know. I mean, that was that whole time. And my persona back then of the boon and all that stuff, it was kind of a shtick. And my teammates enjoyed it. And I kind of played that role. And I had to have 3 lockers. You know, I needed my guest locker next to me. And then I needed, if it was a real busy day, I needed my other guest locker, and I would put all my bats, and it kind of became a kind of a running joke to, especially the press when they come in from other cities. That was the first question. We heard you do have three lockers, but it was just kind of something I didn't take serious. Like I said, it was a shtick, but it was the role I played on that team and kept everybody loose. And there were so many good guys. And I mentioned earlier, Mike Cameron as being one of my favorite teammates. He was a guy that we would ping pong off of each other in those early years in 2000. He was kind of my partner in crime, and we kept that clubhouse loose and a lot of great memories.
Well, Brett, thank you so much for joining me. Really a pleasure to have you on, and best wishes with the podcast too. It's a great show. Make sure everybody who's listening, check it out, the Boone Podcast. Thank you so much, Brett.
All right, John, my pleasure.
Great talk there with Brett Boone, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Brett Boone himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTalb, and Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and sportstalkchicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Until then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Here are the Turtles!